But I could help them by telling them what channel they should go and how they could go about affecting what they wanted to affect. So that is the most important role that I can see for a member of Parliament, is to act as a line of communication. What I'd like to get over to you is a new approach that our particular government has been using in government. And it's an approach that I enjoy. It's an approach that involves people, listens to people, and after it listens to people, it makes policy which is a result of what people have said. And I think this is extremely important. The first time we saw this approach was on the white paper on taxation, when the government put down a proposal to the people and said, this is what we propose as a form of taxation. The people reacted violently to it. They had never participated in government before. And hundreds of briefs were sent to Ottawa. And this is exactly what they wanted. And from those briefs, they got the true feeling of what the people wanted in the form of taxation. They used this to alter their piece of legislation. And now they handed back a piece of legislation which has benefited 5 out of 6 Canadians. And I think to involve people this way is the new type of government that we have. And I think it's a real democratic move ahead. And it's the type of government that I would like to participate in and that I would invite you to participate in. I'll close with that and be happy to answer your questions when they come.
Thank you, Don. We'd now like to call upon Mr. Rainer Gianella. And Rainer, would you please approach this microphone for your introductory remarks, please?
Well, I think I'll take up where Mr. Brannigan left off. And he said he believes it's up to the member of parliament to be a line of communication between the government and people. I think that should be taken one further. It should be a line of communication between different people of different groups. It should be a line of communication between things like research institutes and non-governmental things and non-governmental institutions and government. I'm doing this right now as part of a campaign. I have gotten in touch with a research institute in New Brunswick, which is making advances which will change, I think, in the next 3 years, the whole economic structure of the Yukon Territory. This is the Muskeg Research Institute. They are in touch with the Muskeg Research in Finland. Finland, through using a northern-style intensive agricultural methods, have made agriculture a major part of their economy, where they now export agricultural products. So this approach, which a number of our group are going to go start working, the first experimental part of it next summer, whether I get elected or not, will help, number one, cut down the food costs that everybody's complaining about, and number two, will give us a lead at a possibility of developing an industry which is renewable rather than the non-renewable industries we've been relying on to this time. This is just one step. Another step, we believe government should get closer to people and people should be consulted in government. Now, there's been quite a bit of smoke screens thrown about territorial council reform. And the different parties have all been offering us these nice little bribes, like, you elect me in and our party in, and we'll give you expanded or better territorial council. And it's been coming from every side. Now, I think the people of the Yukon Territory want to have a say in the kind of a territorial council they have. I think they're fed up with the council we have right now. Partly it's a problem of the people in that system, and partly it's the system itself which allows those kind of people to get in that position. So if that question comes up, I've got definite ideas towards a different governmental form which will be much more responsible and democratic. I propose that we, after the election, do a survey of every person in the Yukon Territory to get their ideas on the kind of territorial council they want. And so let's forget about this always depending on Father Ottawa to take care of us and start learning that we have to take care of ourselves. And I'll leave it at that and take the questions as they come.
I would now like to introduce to you a man that likely needs no introduction. The standard bearer for the Progressive Conservative Party in the forthcoming federal election, Mr. Eric Nielsen, and I'd like to apologize to Eric for starting without him, but we had many anxious students that were quite anxious to hear and proceed, Eric, and I explained your absence, and we're so glad that you went without lunch and are with us now.
Thank you, George. It wasn't car trouble that made me late. I had made arrangements to be picked up by air from Burwash, and one of those rare occurrences in the Yukon, mechanical turbulence at Whitehorse, prevented my aircraft from leaving this morning. So I've just finished driving down. I might say that the gentleman that drove me down gives rise to how I want to open my remarks to you today. You're going to become involved in politics. You're going to become involved on one side or another. It's important to remember once the debate is over, that you can be friends again. There's no room for ugliness in politics, but there's all sorts of room, indeed a necessity for a violent clash of views and opinions, because that's what politics is all about. It's a clash of philosophies. One party believes in one thing, another party believes in quite the opposite. I think perhaps that's what I should speak to you about today, because I believe that that might prove to be more useful than discussing particular campaign platforms. A conservative, on the one hand, believes in free enterprise and believes in the incentive society. A conservative believes in the work ethic. A conservative rejects the idea of liberalism, that we can erect a welfare state and support it by burdensome taxes on the people to the breaking point. A conservative, I said, believes in the incentive society. The liberal believes in a controlled society. The liberal, on the one hand, believes that he can achieve industrial growth, believes that he can achieve economic stability by controls. The conservative, on the other hand, believes that these objectives can be achieved by incentives. Incentives through tax measures and the like. Way over on the left of the spectrum, we find the New Democratic Party, which is supposed to be in the socialist orbit, but which has recently been replaced by what I won't call liberalism, but rather Trudeaucracy. So that in Canadian politics, you have these three philosophies in the West. In the East, there is a phenomenon known as the Creditiste Party, which when in the West calls itself the Social Credit Party, and when in the East calls itself the Réellement des Créditistes. Now this party has a philosophy of the extreme right. It is even to the right of conservatism, to the point where incentives themselves are controlled. So I think, simply put, you find on the one hand the conservative philosophy of incentives and the liberal philosophy of controls. Now these conflicting philosophies give rise to, at times, very acrimonious debate in the House of Commons. But that's what that institution is all about. It's a debating forum. And it's where these conflicting views come together. And out of this come the laws that govern us. Thank you very much, and I'll answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Eric. It's obvious from the opening comments that we could likely generate considerable debate amongst the three candidates present. simply on issues raised by them, but we would like the forum to take the semblance of questions and answers so that students' questions can be answered. You may direct a question to a particular member of the panel or to the panel at large, in which case we will allow each of the candidates to answer. So I would ask now that the students gather behind the mics placed on the floor, and one at a time, please identify yourself and then ask the question.
I'm Gareth Jones, and I was wondering if your party could ever support a issue that is morally objectionable to you. Would you vote according to the party line, or would you follow your own philosophy and conscience?
Eric, would you like to answer that first?
I had that situation confront me on a particular debate in the House of Commons. I told you a moment ago I believed in the incentive society and not the control society. There was an occasion arise when the Siemens International Union was being infiltrated by communist agitators, and the Parliament of Canada was asked to pass a bill which would have placed, which in fact did place, the management of that union under the control of a board of trustees, because I did not believe that government had any business putting its nose into the internal management of a trade union, because I didn't believe this should be done through a board of trustees. I voted against that measure, notwithstanding that my party voted for it. So the answer, in short, is I would vote according to the manner in which my conscience dictated.
Rainer, would you like to answer that?
Well, running as an independent, my main reason for running that way and going to Ottawa that way is that I can vote entirely to my convictions to get the best things possible for the Yukon Territory. And so I'll just leave it at that.
On strong moral issues, I would vote exactly as my convictions told me.
Thank you. Could we have the next question, please?
Brenda Pascal. Exactly what is the first basic principle of your party, taking into consideration the objects of your different governments?
Don, do you want to try that?
I didn't get the whole question clearly.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Exactly what is the first basic principle of your party, taking into consideration the different ideas of your governments?
Well, the Liberal Party, first of all, there's some confusion in that Eric's definition of parties is his definition and not my definition, and I don't think any Liberal identifies with a party of control. Incentives are certainly part of our party as they are of any progressive party. A definition of the Liberal Party, I believe, in our party is a party of reform, a party of change. And this is probably why it has been the party that has governed most of the time in Canada. Because today we have 92% of all the scientists that have ever lived since the beginning of mankind are alive today. We're in a period of tremendous change, of rapid change. And we feel that only a party that can change to meet the times can keep in step and govern at this time. So if there's one thing that I would like to identify our party's philosophy with, it's one of reform and one of change.
Rainer?
My stand on, my main stand and our main stand of our group is that the only way we are going to get the necessary things that have to get done up here is through cooperation rather than this petty, violent debate. Because violent debate causes hard feelings always round. No businessman ever runs a business through violent debate. And I think government is nothing but just a supersized business. I think through cooperation and through reasonable negotiation, I could probably get more done in Ottawa than through using violent debate.
Eric?
The first and foremost principle of the Progressive Conservative Party of Canada would be the maintenance of individual liberties and freedoms, and the maintenance of the institution of Parliament where those freedoms are safeguarded.
Thank you. Vicky, if I may beg your indulgence just for 1 minute, we are happy to welcome to the panel the fourth candidate in the forthcoming election, Mr. Harvey Kent. Harvey will be representing the New Democratic Party in the forthcoming election. Harvey, we provided an opportunity for the other candidates to make introductory remarks. Perhaps you would like to make yours at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. And I would like to apologize to all of you for coming in late to your meeting. I ran into an extremely heavy snowstorm in the Anvil area, and that delayed me somewhat coming in. In traveling in, I have had the radio on in the vehicle and did hear the remarks that were made by the candidates in their opening addresses. And I think one of the very important facts that should have been brought out is simply this. The two old line parties have tried to make a distinguishing point between them, between their party philosophies, between themselves. But in fact, since Confederation, Canada has had one party or the other as the government of Canada. And if we examine very, very closely the real philosophies of the two parties, there is no difference between them. Over the years, you've simply taken a pair of shoes off at the end of the term and thrown it aside and tried another pair of shoes. Later, you've had to put the old pair of shoes back on again, because there was no viable alternative. And in the years that they have been running this country, they have brought a situation about that you people, you young people in coming out into the world, are going to have to try to live with. We have a massive, massive unemployment problem in Canada today. When you come out of this school, those of you that finish the school, those of you that may drop out ahead of time, those of you that may go on through university, you're going to find yourselves searching for jobs that don't exist. Neither one of these old line parties can justify that situation. And I think that the New Democratic Party, in our position, in our stand of full employment for Canadians, and this is not an ideal that is out of reach, it is quite possible to look forward to and anticipate full employment. We take the position that this is not a welfare country. It is not a welfare state. People would much rather be employed, gainfully employed, than to come out of your educational institutions and go on to welfare or all the different means that the government has come up with over the past few years to, as a sop to the people of Canada, that they are saying they will take care of you. They will give you the money to live on. They will allow you to continue in your level of poverty that is existent throughout this country today. We say that is not what the people want. The people want employment, and it is quite possible to get it. Now, I don't want to take too much of your time this far into your program, so I will say thank you all for this opportunity to come and talk to you.
Good Could we have the next question, please?
Vicki Sully. A question for Mr. Nielsen. Mr. Nielsen, your campaign kit has denounced the school system for, quote, committing cultural genocide of the Indian culture, unquote. Now, Mr. Nielsen, can you document specifically how this school is systematically murdering, A, the aspirations, B, the values, and C, self-respect of the Indian students?
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you to repeat that because you're echoing. I don't know what I'm doing down there with my voice, but yours comes up here as an echo. Oh, so maybe you could try it over again.
Sure. Okay. Your campaign kit has denounced the school system for, quote, committing cultural genocide of the Indian culture, unquote. Can you document specifically how this school is systematically murdering, A, the aspirations, B, the values, and C, the self-respect of the Indian students?
Certainly. There's no campaign kit yet, as far as I'm aware, but there was a resolution passed by our last annual convention on the 16th of last month. The convention believed that there has to be an input into the educational system directly from the Indians themselves through their brotherhood and other organizations, because they feel that unless they have this direct input, their culture, which was distinctive, and at the moment is being submerged, will eventually be completely obliterated by a dominated white system of education. Does that answer your question?
I guess so. And Mr. Kent, your party leader, David Lewis, has defined large mining corporations as rip-off corporate welfare bums. And Faro Yukon depends on Anvil Mine as its livelihood. And can you tell me if you qualify Anvil Mine as a corporate welfare bum, and if so, why?
Mr. Lewis has not taken the position that he would be against development of mines or whatever it may be. The position he has taken is simply this. I'll name two or three of the more flagrant instances that he is talking about. The Aluminum Company of Canada, for instance, over the past 5 years has made $353 million net profit. In that time, they have obtained something like $20 million in grants from the Canadian people. International business Machines, with a net profit of somewhere in the vicinity of $1 billion per year, recently received a grant of $6 million to build a plant in the province of Quebec. That plant employed 20 people. The Procter and Gamble, at one time they made soap. They've diversified. They received a grant of $15 million of Canadian taxpayer dollars to build a pulp mill at a time when our own pulp mills, our existing pulp mills, had shut down. There was a glut of pulp on the world market. At that time, Procter & Gamble got $15 million of your money to build another pulp mill. Their net profit yearly is somewhere in the vicinity of $2 billion. And that is the sort of welfare bum that Mr. Lewis is complaining about.
Yeah, but you haven't answered my question specifically, like I asked you Anvil Mine, not Procter & Gamble. And
you asked about Anvil Mine.
Right, how you felt about it. Like, that was a question.
How do I feel about the grant that Anvil Mine...
No, I asked...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you too well. I'm having the same problem that Mr. Nielsen has.
I said that Mr. Lewis was defining large mining corporations as rip-off corporate welfare bums. And I asked you if you felt like this towards Anvil Mine, and if so, why?
No, I most certainly don't feel that way. I take the position that if there is a mine, a possible mine, anywhere in Canada, not only in the Yukon, they should receive whatever help they need to get that mine into production. I do object, however, to the extreme loopholes that are in the tax abatement or the grants to these mines. The three-year tax-free system that has recently been changed, now it's an accelerated write-off situation, which means the mines could stretch out the tax-free period as much as 20, 25 years. I object to that. But I do not, and my party does not object to the assistance to bring any mine into operation. I also think that the Anvil mine did require the help that they got and should have had that help.
Thank you.
Jeff?
Jeff Gilbert. I have a two-part question here. Do you believe that for the good of the Yukon representative be a member of the party in power? I'd like this directed to the panel at large, please.
Okay. Rainer, would you like to answer that?
First of all, we're gambling on which is going to be the party in power. I don't think anybody in the country knows. So I think we should vote for the best person for the riding. If you elect the person from the riding that's capable, that can cooperate with no matter what party is in power, that can get along with the people in Ottawa who turn the wheels, and who's got an inquisitive mind, who will search out things like research programs, businesses, etc., and deal with all the other factions of society besides government, who will deal with the civil service, you will get a much better member of parliament than if you just think in terms of getting a member who is going to be a member of the party in power, because you don't know which party is going to win the election.
Don, would you like to answer?
I think if the member is a hard worker, if he is creditable, and if his interpersonal relations is good, probably this is the most important thing, because whichever side of the house he's on, he can still do a lot for his constituents. I think he does have a decided advantage if he is on the side of the government.
Eric, you've had some experience in this.
Yeah, I've sat on both sides, and I can tell you that I have accomplished a good deal more in opposition than I ever did when I was in government. And I've never been thrown out of the Prime Minister's office like I was three times when I was a member on the government side. But one doesn't vote with respect to differing views that you might hold. For a man, one votes for what one believes in, because it is the philosophies of the political party in power that eventually find their way into the laws of the country. And with respect to Rainer, there was one independent sitting in the last parliament, way down at the end, who was seen once in a while by the speaker. And the philosophies of an independent member are not going to find their way into the laws of the country. I believe that you vote for the philosophies and not for the man.
Harvey?
Yes, I think the question of whether the man is a member of the government or not is not necessarily a big factor. I believe that so long as the man has a genuine interest in the people who have sent him there to do a job, then the man has the ability to get up and fight for those people, make sufficient noise in government that he is going to be heard regardless of what party he is in.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Brannigan, did you say that a man could do a better job if he was in the government side of the house?
Yes, I did.
Okay, if you were elected to represent the Yukon and your party was not the government party, would you be willing to relinquish your seat?
No, I wouldn't. Because you recall that I said that I thought that the first qualification was the ability and sincerity of the member. And I said three things: if he was willing to work, if he could get on with other people, and a lot of the decisions and a lot of the work you do is below the level of the government, that you could play a very important role. And when I lived in the Peace River riding, we had a progressive conservative member of parliament who did work hard, and he was fairly effective for the area.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Mark Atchison, and during the beginning of the debate, Mr. Nielsen kindly pointed out what each of the parties believed in. And during those beliefs, I didn't hear one word mention of a party directly believing in Canada. I mean, Canada as Americanization. And I wanted to find out what you guys are going to do about Americanization, because, first of all, this will serve, what's the man on the right's name?
Mr. Kent.
Yeah, this will solve Mr. Kent's problem, because with all the American plants and all the American companies in Canada providing jobs, we don't decide if we've got a job or not. The Americans do. And I wanted to find out what you guys are going to do about Americanization in Canada.
Harvey, we'll let you start with that.
Yes, our party is very, very strong on the issue of the sellout of Canada. When you look at the figures, the massive outpouring of Canadian dollars into foreign countries, the large part of our economy that we no longer own, my party is very, very strong. The New Democratic Party stands on the issue of retaining Canada for Canadians. I won't take the time now to go into the percentages of our country that is no longer owned by Canadians, but when you see them, it is unbelievable to see that we over the years have allowed this portion, this staggering portion of our country, to be owned and controlled by other countries. We say that our products in Canada, the Anvil mine again, for instance, there's 270 people employed in mining that material, and then we ship it in its raw state to a foreign country, and by the time that material has been finished and manufactured, there is possibly another 4,000 jobs involved, and we then pay the other country to buy back the labor and the product that was ours to begin with. And we say this sort of thing has got to stop.
Don, the Liberal Party has issued a paper and policy statement on this. Would you care to comment?
Well, our present government has already taken fairly strong measures to try and redirect the growth of Canada. We have established corporations which have a prime function of buying back Canada. As you know, companies cannot be sold to foreign companies without being assessed first by this board to see whether somebody in Canada can buy them. But the thing has to start at home. Canadians have to have faith in themselves and start to invest in Canada. It's a two-way street. We can't say to the Americans, go home, we don't want you, and expect to have their capital. We do have a job to create jobs. It is a problem. It's a problem that I think we're coping with fairly effectively. But we have to walk the narrow line. We must provide jobs. We need foreign capital. On the other hand, while we're doing this, we must buy back our country and get back control as quickly as we can. But there's no pat answer, and don't believe anyone when they say there is a pat answer. It's a road of common sense, a road of reason, and I think we're traveling down that road right now.
Rayner, would you care to comment?
No single politician can stop the American investment. It takes Canadian people in general. It's not just companies, it's also unions. For example, the only organized union here in the Yukon Territory is an American-controlled union out of Pittsburgh, United Steelworkers of America. The companies themselves, we must start investing in Canada. I think if certain banks will make it a policy that they invest Canadian people's savings into the Canadian companies rather than the American companies which are taking over, it would make a big difference. It has been proven that 70% of the American takeovers in Canada have been financed by Canadian banks with Canadian people's savings. In other words, we have the investment money here. Canadians, from the savings they put in the banks, have the investment capital here in Canada to invest in their own country.
Eric?
Rayner makes a good point. He made several good points. The government of the day has not taken any strong action. They have passed a law which prevents companies having $250,000 worth of assets or annual profits of $3 million or more, requiring that kind of company, if intended to be purchased by foreign capital, to have the purchase approved by the government. That is the only single step that has been taken out of the Gray report. And it falls far short of what is required in order to stop the ever-encroaching control of outside capital. I spoke at the outset of controls. The philosophy of the NDP party to meet this situation is controls. The philosophy of the Liberal Party to meet this situation, again, is controls. Brings me back to what Rayner said. He's quite correct when he says that there is sufficient investment capital in Canada to cause the growth of secondary and tertiary industries, which will provide the jobs, which will defeat inflation, and so on. But that capital, Canadian capital, is going across the border for the most part to the United States and finding its resting place in huge investment pools which receive beneficial tax treatment in the States. In other words, the Canadian makes more money if he sends his dollar south of the border than if he keeps it here because of the controls. So that the answer, and it's not a fat answer, is to alter our tax structure to make it at least as favorable for the Canadian dollar to stay home as it does now for it to go across the border. In my personal view, and this is something that the National Party shares and the Progressive Conservatives seen, there should be more favorable tax treatment for the Canadian investment dollar in Canada than there is in the United States, and there would be no doubt about that tax about that investment dollar staying home and encouraging the growth of our own industry. And the country, because it is a narrowing gap, the country will eventually reacquire its own industries because there can be no, it's impossible to buy back what has already gone. We've got to get it back gradually through incentives.
Thank you, Eric. David?
Dave Porter, and moving toward the idea of self-government in the Yukon, we all know it takes money. And I believe at one time we did have a chance to get this money, which was the mining bill, which was defeated, C-187. And I would like to hear your views on this.
Sure, you've joined two subjects there. You're talking about self-government and C-187, which was an act to amend the Yukon Minerals Act.
Yes, and C-187 was a bill to tax the mining companies in the Yukon and leave, which the money would be left in the Yukon, which we could build our government, run our own government up from.
Eric, would you like to start that?
Yeah, it's a double-barrel question, but I'm going to have to straighten Don out on C-187 first. C-187 was an act to amend the Yukon Quartz Mining Act, would have changed the name to the Yukon Minerals Act. And it was not merely for the purpose of taxing mining companies. It did have some changes in its royalties provisions. But its primary purpose was to insert, again, another control, a clause requiring 51% ownership of mining companies by Canadians. It also included a clause, which is not present in the existing law, which would have empowered the minister to make regulations and to delegate that regulatory power to myriads of bureaucrats and enabling them to make decisions which were not appealable to the courts, which they are now, and several other changes. But the bill was stalled by concerted opposition for 2 years and finally had to be shelved by the minister. Incidentally, with respect to should a member be of the same as the government, I might point out to you that had we had a Liberal member sitting in the last 4 years, that bill would now be law, a very harmful bill to Yukoners. Now, with respect to autonomy, This year saw the Yukon produce over $100 million worth of mine product. The federal government uses the argument that we can't progress toward autonomy in the Yukon because we don't pay our way. My answer to him is that there is no price tag on democratic institutions. It's as simple as this. It is wrong to have government employees telling elected representatives of the people what to do. It is right for the elected representatives of the people, the councillors, to be telling the government employees what to do. We're topsy-turvy here in the Yukon. Governments are of people, for people, and by people, and not of government employees, for government employees, and by government employees. It's just that simple. We want to change all that and bring about reform which will lead to that kind of autonomy.
Rainer, two topics, C-187 and self-government.
Starting off with Bill C-187, we've got to take the major objections to it as pointed out by Mr. Nielsen. The one major objection, of course, is the discretionary powers of the minister. Now, that has to go. And the other two objections is the increase in royalty rate and the Canadian ownership requirement. Now, as far as the increase in royalty rate, as far as that goes, we're stuck in the same old problem where one faction of the populace says the mining company's got to pay more, and the other faction, which says the mining company's got to pay less so we keep them here. Now, I think it's about time we call the bluff of the mining companies, and I believe to some degree an increase in the royalty rates. However, should a compromise solution have to be found, so Bill C-187, which thanks to the efforts of Mr. Nielsen is on the shelf now, can come off the shelf and come through to solve the old problem of the mining companies getting a free ride. And what I am proposing is a slight decrease in royalty rate. However, you add a certain percentage of the profits, which normally would be taken as royalties, the companies would have to set aside in an economic stabilization fund, which they could only reinvest here in the territory. This way, for example, in a given year, instead of paying 15% of their profits in taxes, they only pay 10% in taxes, but they must slough off about 10% of their profits in an economic stabilization fund. This fund, whenever the economy is fluctuating or dropping, can be reinvested. This is a non-inflationary method used across all industries in Europe for curing and for keeping the economy at a steady growth rate and keeping the economy growing steadily rather than fluctuating the way our economy does with its ups and downs. Now, as far as the autonomy part of it goes, autonomy in a political sense doesn't mean a damn thing unless we get control of our own economics and our own finances. Our group has made steps in this process in that we are contacting people in research laboratories to developing secondary and tertiary industries, renewable industries like farming and agriculture rather than the present non-renewable mining-based economy. These are all the major steps, and the political end of it, I believe the people of the Yukon Territory, as I stated when we started out, I think they should have a say in the kind of territorial council reforms that they want. Now, to a great degree, our present governmental systems have not been functioning this purpose, in that they do not, even though in theory democracy is of the people, by the people, for the people, presently our electoral system favors a certain group of the populace over another one. And I think we should look at other governmental systems used in the past by past civilizations which were more democratic than ours, specifically the methods used in ancient Greece, in Athens. I'll articulate further on it later on.
Don?
Bill 187, which was designed to replace the old Yukon Courts Act, was asked for by the people of the Yukon, and I think eventually it will come back in a modified form and be passed. I had the nerve 2 years ago to say that the bill was not all bad, and the world fell on my head because there was a tremendous lobby and emotional backlash here against it. But to put the bill in reality, as the young lad pointed out, there are many points of the bill which are good and should be implemented. The bill, I think, was badly written and not adequately researched, and there were some bad points in the bill, and we fought to get those bad points changed. It's my hope that if I'm the member of parliament when they're rewriting the bill, I can assist them in trying to get the thing
so it fits the Yukon and is not badly written. I somehow see that as the role of the Member of Parliament, not rather to hang the government for coming up with a bad bill. As far as local autonomy is concerned, I think the more decisions that we can make at this end, perhaps the more accurate those decisions will be. I endorse decentralization. I'm not real keen to rush in and pick up the bill for education or for health or for some of the areas that were heavily subsidized from the federal government. I think we'd do well to let the government continue to subsidize in these areas until such time as our economic base is strong enough that we can pay our own way.
Harvey?
Yes, the previous speaker has not been quite consistent in the things he has said to you today. He said earlier that his party believed in legislation from the people, that they wanted full input from the people. Now, he's just got through telling you that Bill C-187 was no good. Obviously, the people didn't participate in drawing up that bill. On the question of Bill C-187, at the time it was a controversial item, I had a letter printed in the White Horse Star in which I took the position that Bill C-187 in its entirety was not helpful to the people of the Yukon. However, parts of the bill were very necessary. Parts of it were very necessary for the people of the Yukon and the people of Canada. And I suggested that the bill be redrafted and come back before Parliament and be passed, with the exclusion of the parts that would have been painful to us here in the Yukon. On the question of self-government, I think you all know of the position I took some short while ago when I was instrumental in a petition to the Governor General of Canada asking him to dissolve our local government. If we make changes in this local government, it's got to be done in such a way that the people will have full input into that local government. It's got to speak the minds of the people. But in obtaining self-government, it's also got to be done very, very carefully with a view to the cost. I have heard it said that the cost cannot be a factor, and yet I feel that that cost must be considered. If self-government costs the people of the Yukon more than we are presently paying to live here, then I say we've got to assess it very, very closely. Thank you.
Thanks, Harvey. Roger?
Roger Caron. And of concern to youth is the various differences across this nation of the age of the majority. For example, in Alberta, to enter a lounge, the age is 18. In the Yukon and BC, it is 19. Now, I know that there is an age of the majority for voting at 18. I also realize that there is provincial governments which rule their own drinking age. But I would like to know, should there be a standardized age of majority for all of Canada? And what age should this be, as well as what, if any, is your party's policy concerning this, and how do you plan to bring it about?
The age of majority. Harvey, do you want to have a first go at that?
I wasn't too clear on the question. If I could be in the building, that makes it difficult to fully understand the question.
Roger, if you don't speak too quickly and try and enunciate your words as you do in English class.
Great. Now, I was saying, though, that there is an age of majority across Canada for voting at 18. But different provinces have their drinking age at either 18 or 19 or whatever. But I would like to know, should there be a standardized age of majority for all of Canada concerning voting provincially and federally and drinking also? And what is your party's policy on this, and what can be done about changing this?
Well, I think the answer to your question, I could go back to the days when I was a member of the Canadian Armed Forces. Many, many, many of the Canadians, young people, below the legal age of voting or drinking, at that time 21, the country still felt that at 18 we were old enough to go overseas and get involved in the war and fight for the country, possibly get shot. I thought it was a bad situation then, and I still think it's a bad situation. We have to assess our young people and their ability to participate in the affairs of the world, in the affairs of their country. And we have to place the rights of a full citizen in the hands of our young people at an age when they are quite able to handle those rights. That age should be standard all across the country. There should be no regional disparities on that question. Don?
I think that the age of 18 is an age of maturity, and that it should be uniform across Canada for both drinking and voting. I think voting is a grave responsibility, and if you're to shoulder that responsibility, you should also have the responsibility of being able to conduct yourself when you're drinking. A federal member of parliament does not have influence of that particular jurisdiction in the provinces. It's a provincial area. So the only way, it's answering the second part of your question, that one could bring it about across Canada would be to encourage the provinces to do it, but it doesn't fall in the federal area of jurisdiction.
Rainer?
I'll just follow on the same lines as the old boy here. And that the age should be reduced, it should be uniform across the country, but as he says, a federal member can only influence and make suggestions, not much more than that. He has no power over that matter.
Eric?
The simple answer is yes to the first part of the question. It should be standard. As to how to bring it about, the federal government should take the lead at the next federal-provincial conference and suggest that all provinces adopt that standard age.
Thank you. Roger, I'd like to assure the candidates that the question was not at all related to our first high school dance of the year that's coming off tonight. There are still several students who would like to ask questions, but our allotted time is rapidly coming to a close. If I can make this suggestion, perhaps we could ask each of the candidates to state a brief summary of youth and their party's ideas about youth, and perhaps a theme for the forthcoming federal election. Those of you that wish to ask questions, I'm sure the candidates would welcome you individually. After the program, you could come up to the stage and talk to them. I know they would also welcome you in their various headquarters throughout the city. You could have a chance to go in and sit down and discuss your ideas with them and receive answers to your questions. So if we can, in the descending order of our original appearance, Harvey, would you like to wrap things up from your point of view, please?
Thank you. The New Democratic Party takes the position that the youth of Canada have not been fully involved in the affairs of the country. We've taken the position that the educational system itself, because of the fact that the teachers, the pupils, the students are not involved in the drafting of the educational structure, that you people are not getting out of our educational system what you should get. In particular, our system is not producing curious minds and thinkers. Our system is designed to slot you people into the workforce, either as a professional or as a technician or as an unskilled person. All over the Yukon today, in traveling to the different mines that I travel to, I find many, many people with university degrees working as laborers in the mines. There is something wrong with our system when this sort of thing can happen. We want to involve the young people in making the decisions on how this should be changed so that you come out of the schools not only slotted into jobs, but prepared to be thinkers with curious minds and to make this a better country to live in. Thank you.
Eric?
The Yukon Progressive Conservative Association has long been extremely active in obtaining the involvement of young Yukoners. It is the policy of the National Party to do the same thing. We have a very active Young Progressive Conservative Association on the national level and a youth federation at the university level. We have an active group at the University of British Columbia with over 30 members who are Yukoners and who once attended this school. That is an active group now. They participate in meetings in Ottawa, annual meetings, and annual conventions. And one of the graduates of this school, Freddie Metcalf, who is now in third year university at UBC, is one of the 25-man ruling body of the National Progressive Conservative Party. He is the youngest member on that executive board. The responsibility for becoming involved is largely yours. All political parties will welcome you for the purpose of exposing you to their philosophy and for the purpose, if you hanker to that philosophy, of getting involved yourselves. We have an active organization now in the Yukon, and we welcome you. The main responsibility, however, is yours. We'll do the encouraging, but you'll have to play the major part. Governments are not all bad. One of the good things that the Trudeau government has initiated, even though badly mismanaged, is a program called the Opportunities for Youth. The Opportunities for Youth, in principle, is a good idea. The exchange of students that occurred here last summer, where 26 students came from the province of Quebec, two of whom spent their time with my family in Whitehorse, were replaced by a similar number of Yukon students who went to the province of Quebec. This kind of program can do nothing but enlighten young persons, and I dare say that if it had been existent at the time that René Lévesque, the leader of the Parti du Québécois in Quebec, had been going to school, he wouldn't be sounding off the way he is today. So that sort of thing is good, but the mismanagement part of it, where you're giving grants for counting seagulls off the coast of Newfoundland and growing pot in interior BC, I can't go along with that.
Rainer, could we have your concluding comments, please?
Well, I think the main thing that the youth are interested in is finding out the general attitude of politicians and politics. I think myself, as a young person, I am sick of the negative attitudes, the negative violent clashes I've heard. It's quite easy, I found, or anybody can criticize and cut a government down for what it's doing. But I think the thing we should look for is not being able to criticize them, but to be able to offer a definite positive alternative. And this is basically what our group is about, is finding alternatives, finding solutions to the problems which are going to be facing the Yukon Territory. Alternatives like the co-op to cut food prices down, the establishment of intensive scientific agriculture along the lines of Finland to give us a third industry. Alternatives like a territorial council reform on the people level. These are the kind of alternatives that we are in favor of, and we are in favor of positive action. Now, Mr. Kent has come out and said something about the school system. He has yet to come up with an exact positive alternative what to replace it with. and about his comment about a university degree student working at a mine. Well, I'm a miner, and I know a lot of miners with degrees, and maybe these guys with degrees really want to work in mines. So what's wrong with that? And as far as... Now, going on to Mr. Nielsen's remarks about counting seagulls, well, counting seagulls can be very important because seagulls are ecologically very important and that they are natural scavengers. So, and the other one about growing marijuana, well, you know, marijuana could become one of Canada's major cash crops. It could be a favorite source of finance. Actually, our intensive agriculture project, you really know what we're really thinking about in the long run. I'll leave it off at that.
Thank you, Rainer. Don?
In the course of my travels, if there's any one criticism that I've had leveled at me and my party, is that we are too youth-orientated. Ladies and gentlemen, I am proud to be associated with a party that has its roots with youth. I feel that to have young people in your party, to identify with young people, to derive many of your ideas from young people, are to have a party of the future, a party of tomorrow. Because today we change at such a rapid pace. If we don't listen to the young people, if we don't act on your ideas, then we'll be out of step before we get in step. So I think it's a great thing to have young people involved actively in a party. And I am proud of our party's faith in young people. And they've shown that faith, and this is why they're criticized, because they have created opportunities for youth. They said to the people, we have faith in you, we'll give you the money, and you tell us what your program should be. You tell us what you want to do, and then you do these things. And this has happened. And sure, some of the things haven't been according to what society really wanted. But a lot of the things have been very acceptable. And there's been a lot of growth, a lot of self-satisfaction. And I think young people are proud that we have that confidence in them and that they can identify with a party and feel at home with a particular party. We have also sponsored money to travel, and this causes criticism. But any of you who have traveled and who have camped out and lived on the land know that travel is knowledge. Travel is understanding, and that when you travel, you get...
We're taking time off from their hectic campaign trails to come out and speak to us today. It has been said that bad governments are elected by good citizens who don't vote, and I hope that as each of you approach the age of majority, that you will give that some thought. It is a very powerful, as I said, influential in the basis of our democracy, that you can cast a vote and vote for the man of your choice. Someone, a former governor of Massachusetts, once said that a successful politician should have the hide of a rhinoceros, the memory of an elephant, the persistence of a beaver, the native friendliness of a mongrel pup, the heart of a lion, and the stomach of an ostrich. And if it helps, to have humor and the ubiquity of a crow. But all of these combined are not enough unless, when it comes to matters of principle, you also have the stubbornness of an army mule. And I think we in the Yukon are very fortunate indeed to have before us four men, all of whom I feel could do a job of representing the Yukon in Ottawa. And I would ask you now to extend our thanks to having them come out and talk to us today.